the Australian Defence Force National Cycling Championships Down Under.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, we're talking about cycling products that we used to use but wouldn't dream of anymore.
And don't worry, rim brakes are not on our list. We've also got news of the best cycling cities in the world, a new rear derailleur that's the first to be made here in the UK in 60 years, and the hardest Pro Zwift workout we've ever seen. This week in the world of cycling, we learnt that cycling in London is still on the up. There are now 1.5 million bike trips per day in the UK's capital, up 12% in a year and up 40% since 2019.
That's a huge number.
Massive,
isn't it? Now, you might be asking why? Well, more segregated bike lanes, which increase safety, which leads to more riders, which in turn makes cycling even safer. Plus, cycling is, did you know, contagious. So if you know someone who cycles, it becomes much more normal for you to try as well. Apparently.
We also learned this week that Jonas Vingegaard does not want to stay within cycling when he finally finishes his racing career. Instead, he's contemplating taking up carpentry.
Really?
Yeah.
So he's not thinking of being an artist then?
Well, never say never, Si. We also learned that the GCN Black Friday sale is still on. So it turns out that's what happens if you forget to turn off the discount.
Well done, Dan. On holiday last week.
I was on holiday, yeah.
Out of office, but left the discount on. Anyway, there are some mega deals to be had. All books are 50% off. So are some jerseys and T-shirts as
well. You know, if I didn't work for GCN, I'd be straight on those. I love a bargain.
Yeah. Well, you're definitely tight, aren't you?
That's another way of saying it.
Anyway, if you love a bargain, you don't have to be tight like Dan, but if you just like a bargain, head to the shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com or scan the QR code that's on screen now.
Every purchase you make helps us fund all the free-to-view videos that we put out here at GCN, so it is always very much appreciated when you support us in that way.
Yeah, it genuinely is. Yeah, we wouldn't be able to do what we do, would we, without you lot out there?
Exactly. Please make a purchase.
Yeah. Now, finally, this week, we learned that 11 to 21 straight-through cassettes are a thing of the past.
We did. This thought came up in my mind because I was basically sorting out my bike collection on my week off work site. And
bike collection, Dan?
Well, kind of, yeah. I've got a few of my old race bikes at home, but I've also got a couple of vintage bikes that I bought about 15 years ago when I had grand ideas of building up a beautiful bike collection.
What happened then?
What happened is that I bought two about 15 years ago and I got bored and those two have just been gathering dust ever since. Anyway, they're both from the 80s, I think.
Okay.
An Allen and a Colnago, and they've both got cassettes on, or perhaps blocks, as I think they were called
possibly,
at the time.
Yeah.
That are so small, you wonder how anyone ever used to use them or pedal them.
What are we talking, Dan?
You never sound more like a geezer. What are we talking, Dan?
What are we talking, Dan?
I reckon 6 sprockets, maybe 7.
Okay.
And then 12 through to 21, in terms of the teeth, I think. It's not straight through, but combined with an inner chainring that I think is 42 teeth, doesn't exactly offer much in the way of climbing gears.
No.
I mean, honestly, just look at them and think, nobody in their right mind would willingly use something like that now unless it was just to make a point.
Yes.
Not even if it had more sprockets.
Pretty much. I mean, it is one of the things that we take for granted now. Yeah. Like, to put it in context, if you're not overly familiar with your sprockets and, what did you call it?
A block.
Yes. I mean, most gears now are an 11 to 30.
Mm.
Wow. Plus maybe 11 to 36, some are 11 to 42. I mean, yeah, you get...
The 21's about midway down now, isn't it?
Basically, yeah, you get like tiny gears, huge gears.
Easy gears,
thank you, yeah. So, most people now would never know what it was like to grind up a climb, even when you were really fit.
Well, that's the point, yeah. You must have been grinding even when we were really fit. Mm. Anyway, we asked the other presenters here at GCN Megabase to ask them what else we used in the past that we were perfectly happy to do so at the time that we would never choose to use ever again.
Yeah, well, all of us agreed on super skinny
on
tires.
Something. Yeah, finally.
Pretty much. Well, no, we didn't all agree. So all of us said no 19 or 21 millimetre wide tires.
Yeah.
Ollie went so far as to say he wouldn't even use 25 millimetre tires.
And I would agree with Ollie.
So. Really?
Yeah.
I wouldn't go that far.
Why not?
Well, I don't want to spoil an upcoming video too much, Well, I mean, I won't be spoiling it because it's not about tire width. But anyway, I recently rode a bike from the 90s, an ex-Tour de France race bike.
Right.
Well, it would have been a Tour de France race bike if the entire team hadn't been pulled out due to a massive doping scandal.
Well, that's a spoiler to start with.
Well, I mean, that'll be in the title,
maybe
so that's
not
fine.
In that era. No, it could be any team.
Guess the team, yeah. Anyway, the bike was absolutely flipping amazing. And it only had 23mm tyres on, but you would not have thought, oh gosh, this is not comfortable.
Oh, really? Or, oh, but gosh, out of choice, you'd have gone bigger, right?
Not on that bike.
Oh, really?
No.
Well, that's quite interesting. Well, yeah. I would, Sarge, because bigger tyres are just as fast, they're more grippy, and more importantly, they're infinitely more comfortable than those small volume tyres, particularly on British roads.
I'm not going to allow you to use the word infinitely.
Exponentially.
Marginally.
But particularly on British roads, which tend to be made out of sort of bits of stone that have been tarmacked into place on the surface with big potholes every so often.
Yeah, basically it's gravel that's been glued, hasn't it, basically?
Yeah. What tyres have you got on your bikes?
28 on some road bikes. Sounds awful, doesn't it? On some road bikes.
Yeah,
30 on my Canyon Air Road. I like those. Mm. And I've got 32s on my fixies as well.
Crikey.
My fixie, which I really like. So, yeah. I mean, I was surprised that those 23mm tyres on the old bike didn't feel as bad as I thought they would. But anyway, with tyres, I think to a certain extent it was just misinformation back in the day, wasn't it, to a degree?
Yeah.
We were told that smaller tyres were faster. They felt faster because you could feel every minor imperfection in the road.
You're pinging.
Yeah, they literally pinged, didn't they? But now we've got data that shows different. And also, crucially, we've got wheels that are designed for wider tyres.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's also then a self-fulfilling prophecy because you need wider rims for your wider tyres. But then when you've got wider rims, you need wider tyres again in order to get the same comfort.
Yeah, yeah, true. Well, anyway. I would never go back to anything sub 25 at least.
No, okay.
Next on my list is big lights with a huge battery pack that you used to have to Velcro underneath the top tube. Do you remember them?
Yeah, or put in your water bottle case.
Yeah. Again, it was a necessity of the time because light and battery technology didn't allow it to be put into a smaller handlebar mounted device. But I happily used a set back in the day when I was training in the evenings after school, so in winter.
You couldn't sound more old if you tried. Yeah, we are talking a long time.
We are talking a long time. Thanks for pointing that out, Si. Yeah, why put a battery pack on your bike when you don't need to?
Well, I mean, you did need to, otherwise you wouldn't have had any lights after 5 minutes.
This is the point of the show today, Si.
Sorry, yeah, I know what you mean. I would not buy lights like that anymore. No.
Well, I shall allow you to move on. What's your next one?
Well, I'm going to say quick releases.
Quick releases?
Yeah, I know. Controversial. This kind of comes into the whole rim brake, disc brake thing. But so I don't ride many bikes with quick releases anymore. Mm. But when I do, I sort of have this horrible feeling that the wheel could drop out at any time, which is stupid, I know, because, like, well, that didn't happen for all of the gazillion years when I rode quick releases quite happily.
But how's it different with through axles? They can come undone.
Well, in theory, a quick release, I mean, you've got the little lawyer lips, haven't you, that stop it coming out. But in the olden days, 15 years ago, you filed the lawyer lips off so you could get your wheels out quicker. And so then all it would take, wouldn't it, be for the quick release to get caught on something, maybe like another rider's bit of bike or something, and it would flip open, and then it could, in theory, fall out. Whereas a through axle, even if it came undone, the through axle is still attached to the frame. You'd need to literally watch it slide all the way out, but it couldn't because your wheel would flop over.
I do take your point.
I mean, in theory, it could catastrophically break, but even then, I don't think...
No.
I mean, it's just, it is a better system, isn't it?
I never really like to admit this, Si, but I think you might be right on that one and I might be wrong. Maybe our viewers know otherwise. If you do, let us know in the comment section down below.
Yeah.
To be fair, going back to the quick releases specifically, I have seen a couple of quick release fails.
Have you?
Yeah. Once was when I was 14 or 15. So again, yes, it is a long time ago, Si.
Okay.
I was doing a mountain bike race against a friend that I'd started racing with, and he was always better than me. And on this one occasion, I thought, actually, I might have the measure of him today. He's in sight, at least.
Really?
Normally he was out of sight. And we came to this long stretch of gravel road, which is basically what mountain biking was back in the day. And there was always this course we've done it many times. There's always like this little dip that you picked your front wheel up to hop over. He did that some 100 metres or so in front of me, and his wheel just carried going straight on.
Yeah.
And I watched that go into the hedge and his forks dip into the gravel and him go over the bars. And that was the first time I beat him. And actually, that same guy came over to do the London to Manchester charity ride with me today because he now lives in Perth, Australia.
So today, you mean this year?
This year, yeah.
Did he have through axles?
I think so, yeah.
You did?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay, right, go on, it's your turn for the next one.
I'm going to go for wired cycling computers / head units.
Okay.
Again, not really an option to not have wires back in the day, but now that wireless is so good, why would you ruin the look of your bike, for starters, I say, with a load of wires like wrapped around the cables and the fork legs?
Yeah, and the frame if you had a cadence sensor. And my first ever power meter needed...
Yeah, mine did too.
A cable all the way running from there.
You don't want to know how long I used to spend meticulously wrapping my computer cable around my gear cables and down my fork legs.
I can imagine you spending quite a lot of time meticulously wrapping your cable around your fork leg.
I was very proud of myself every time. It was basically a masterpiece. It was an Avocet bike computer. I should also say, by the way, I'm not against simplistic head units that don't have GPS, etc., or even people that don't want to use one at all, fill your boots. I'm just saying, I would never use wires again.
No, there's no need. Fair enough, yeah. Although, in a similar vein, Dan, I would not use maps again.
Yeah.
I mean, use maps, because I like maps, because I'm a nerd, but the thought of having a map in my pockets to go riding with, when you consider following a GPX route on a Wahoo or a Garmin or whatever, just how much time you save and how much more seamless and effortless your bike ride is anywhere on the planet.
I've agreed with you on this before and I agree with you still now.
Yeah. Have I said this before, have I? Probably.
Well, you talked about it on a separate video. I remember making a note of it on the GCN show. Yeah, they're amazing pieces of equipment, aren't they?
We made a GCN Plus video, you and me, about this precise subject.
We did
a challenge. I used a Wahoo and you had a map.
Yeah,
I think I finished about an hour in front of you. But then you did stop for a beer, I seem to remember.
Quite possibly, yeah. I might have stopped for quite a few because I don't remember as much as you. There you go.
Changing the subject from maps to socks now. I'm not sure I would ever use normal socks as overshoes again.
Oh, I used to do that.
Yeah, I think we all did. It probably needs some explaining, like straight through cassettes. But basically, it was a thing to wear normal cycling socks over your shoes in order to look pro. My favourites were white Nike cycling
socks. Mine too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And I used to cut a hole in it for the cleats, and I even used them for mountain bike racing as well as on the road. And I thought I was as cool as a cucumber.
I was just about to say that. I bet you thought you were cool. I did as well. They were more of a fashion statement, though, than anything at the time.
I mean, that's all they were. Arguably, they might have kept your feet a shade warmer on sort of cool days. But I mean, they were almost like disposable socks, weren't they? Like, they lasted about 10 rides and then they'd be
pieces. Especially off-road when you had to walk,
But I didn't need to walk.
But yeah, they were a fashion statement, and that fashion might come back in. You never know, you might have jumped the gun on that one.
By the time they're back in fashion, Dan, because they will come back, I'm sure, I'll be far too old to think about it.
Well, some might say you already are too old to think about fashion. Are those massive cycling shades that you cover your face with fashionable?
Yes.
I mean, if we do a show in 5 years' time, maybe we'll add them to this same list.
I highly doubt it. In fact, I might even go bigger so that more of my face is protected when I end
from
up
brambles.
Face first in brambles. Yes, yeah. Right, have you got any more?
I have got more, yeah.
Go ahead.
Wheel-on indoor trainers. I do feel a little bit bad about this one because I know there will be people out there still using them because they can be more affordable than the direct drive. But once you have used a decent direct drive indoor trainer, you'd never go back to a wheel-on one, would you?
Yeah.
I wouldn't anyway.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, direct drive trainers are a game changer, particularly smart trainers, right?
Because the old ones were just so choppy, weren't they, when you were riding them? It was a horrible experience. Although that might be ingrained in my mind because all I had to look at whilst doing that indoor training on a choppy indoor trainer was a white wall.
Mm. To be fair, I had a white wall behind my choppy indoor trainer, and when I first got one, I used my mountain bike on it, and I was really like, oh God, this is really loud, for about an hour, and when I looked at the white wall behind me, it was covered in black rubber dust.
Your parents' white wall, presumably.
Yeah, it was my bedroom, and I was like, not only had my tyre completely disintegrated in an hour, I'd also kind of ruined their wall, so yeah.
They do go through a lot of rubber, don't they?
Yeah.
Especially with our power.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot about indoor training that you wouldn't want to get back to be fair, would you?
No, I think you're right on that one as
well. Certainly there was a very different feel back in the day.
Well, I think that's exhausted our list for the time being, but we know that you'll have more at home. You know what to do? We want to hear from you in the comments just down below. What did you used to use happily on your bike that you wouldn't dream of using now?
Yeah, and you disagree with any of ours?
Probably quick releases, I'd imagine.
Well, they can be a hazard, Dan. I'd be interested to know also what people who maybe haven't been riding for quite as long as us think that they use now that they probably won't use in a few years' time.
Yeah.
Like massive sunglasses.
Save that for another GTN show.
Yeah, I'll write that down.
We'll nick that one.
Can I just say, though, as well, after all of this, what this list makes me think more than anything is how few products there are that I wouldn't use anymore. So lots of the things that I think people assume that we wouldn't use because we get to ride the latest and greatest aero, disc brake, wireless, jazzy bikes all the time. Mm. But I'm here for mechanical, here for rim brakes, 10-speed, whatever, like, there's not that much I wouldn't go back to.
No, we literally couldn't come up with any more, could we? We racked our brains.
We were talking about down tube shifters, but, you know, we felt that was probably neither of us had ever used down tube shifters.
Well, I did
really.
When I was 7. So not really in anger.
Not really. Anyway, we want to hear your thoughts on this subject, so get involved.
Although that was the rally road bike that I clotheslined myself with when racing a mate across the cricket ground. We were quite a long way apart, and I didn't see the rope that was barring off the cricket bowling green. It hit me right here. I had a big red mark when I got home. It hurt quite a lot, actually.
Did it take you off?
Yeah. It whipped me straight off the back. I was speeding along on that rally racer.
Oh, mate. Explains a lot, that crash, I think, doesn't it?
And now it's time for cycling shorts.
Cycling shorts now, and we're going to start with the very good news that four-time Tour de France winner Chris Froome is back out on his bike following a horror crash a few months ago whilst he was out training.
Yeah, it was a strange one at the time because there wasn't that much information on it, only that he was seriously injured in hospital. It later transpired that he had multiple fractures but pericardial tear, which was the most serious, but 4 months on, he's back out pedalling.
Yeah, what's next for Froome though? No one knows.
No information on that either. No. Some tech news now, and it's not often we talk in isolation about a new rear derailleur, but that's exactly what we've got today. Ratio Technologies have just released the MEC, a modular serviceable derailleur, which is made in the UK, something which they say has not happened for 60 years.
Yeah, what's cool is that this MEC, which is designed in isolation, is designed to work with a raft of different mechanical group sets, from 11-speed SRAM through to 12-speed Shimano, with everything in between, direct mount or conventional.
Everything except Campagnolo.
Well, right. Yeah.
Which was, you'd imagine, deemed too niche, and it's perhaps no coincidence, given that the legendary Italian company is currently facing some serious cuts at their HQ in Vicenza.
Yeah, hopefully this is just a sign of the post-COVID dramas that have besieged much of the cycling industry. But yeah, our fingers are firmly crossed.
Yeah, was it 40% of the workforce was rumoured?
Yeah, that doesn't sound good. Right, after Dan's video about safety in the pro peloton a couple of weeks ago, we noticed two recently retired pro cyclists talking about exactly that subject on a Dutch cycling talk show.
Yeah, so retired Dutch pro Stef Clement suggested that all prospective professional cyclists should be required to pass a proficiency test or crash course to ensure they have the necessary bike handling skills before they join the pro peloton.
Yeah, a little bit like what Ashley Moore-Mapaccio was suggesting in your video as well. Apparently, he said that people used to say that he couldn't go around corners, and he said in hindsight, probably agreed with them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I thought was quite funny. But anyway, perhaps more interestingly, though, than a proficiency test, Tom Dumoulin suggested that protective race clothing should be normalised.
So many people in the comments said exactly that. Like, why have they not got better clothing for the event of a crash?
I mean, his point was that people used to kick off about having to wear helmets because that obviously wasn't compulsory back in the day. And so why not make people wear, like, knee pads and elbow pads and...
Very good point.
Yeah.
Interestingly, in the USA, a bill has been introduced that would hope to make cycling education more widespread by allowing federal funding for it.
Yeah, sticking with safety. Huh? It's called the Bike Act, which, I like this, Dan, stands for Bicycle Instruction, Knowledge and Education.
Oh, it's a great acronym. It's one of those acronyms where they found the word they wanted to fit to start with and then added the words to it.
Basically, yeah. I mean, it kind of works, right? But yeah, as we heard at the start of the show in London, it feels like giving kids access to bikes at an early age and instructing them on how to ride could hopefully empower a generation of new riders. The idea that people just being more familiar and exposed to bikes and being made more confident could be kind of that self-perpetuating cycle. And before anyone starts talking about victim blaming, by the way. Yes, we know some people will. We know that driver education is arguably more important than cyclist education, but anything is good, surely.
Well, you'd have thought so.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you? Copenhagen Eyes, the internationally renowned cycling think tank and consultancy, released their annual worldwide city rankings of the best cities in which to ride a bike.
Yeah. This differs from the list that we talked about a few weeks ago.
There's quite a few of these lists.
Compiled by someone else. Well, yeah, Copenhagen Eyes, though. That's like top draw listing. Anyway, their top five probably won't surprise you.
No drum roll needed then.
Well, it was a bit tense, I think, at the top. Paris in fifth, which deserves credit for basically turning their city around
massively.
From cycling hell. Amsterdam in fourth.
Ooh. And they're not going to be happy, are
they? They will, yeah. Ghent in third. Copenhagen in second.
They're not going to be happy either.
No. So the top spot goes to Utrecht in the Netherlands. Have you ever ridden there, Dan?
Yes, I have.
Have you?
Think it was stage two of the 2010 Giro d'Italia. Finished in Utrecht.
Right.
Memory serves me correctly.
Was it nice?
I don't really remember, which probably means no, if I don't remember it. It was a fast and nervous stage, though. Finished in a bunch sprint. I was 182nd. Just behind Chris Froome in 181st.
Really? I'm assuming it was the city nice.
Oh, well, I've got no idea on that either.
Okay,
it's the same thing because I don't remember it. Probably not.
Right, well, there we go. It's probably a cycling paradise even in 2010. The top North American city, by the way, Montreal in 15th. Quebec, next one in 29th. The top US city, Minneapolis, which is a home of Park Tool. They come in 44th. London. Remembering, we were trumpeted just how good that is. 33rd.
Got us low down, wouldn't it? Imagine how many people would cycle if it was higher than 33rd.
Exactly. And then my home city, Bristol, made the list. We should say it's not the list of the top 100 cities globally, but it's the top 100 out of a bunch of cities that they selected carefully for reasons that I can't actually remember.
Okay.
But anyway, it's in 61st place. Good political support. Not bad for infrastructure, just not many people actually cycle.
Oh, it's a shame.
Yes,
isn't
it is, yeah.
I need to do a better job of influencing people.
So I try hard, I do try hard, yes.
Right, we've got a little update on the Zwift Racing League, or ZRL, at the moment. The second round has started, and the GCN teams are back in the thick of the action again.
Yeah, shout out to Connor's team, who apparently, Dan, have all been moved up a league.
Wow.
Because their FTPs have improved so much, they've had to move into a higher category.
That is actually quite cool.
It is very cool, isn't it? Yeah.
So congrats to those guys. And Si, your team are apparently once again looking to be the top performing GCN squad for the second time.
What can I say, mate?
I don't know, maybe something humble, like the fact that you've got nothing to do with their performance. I don't know. Sticking with Zwift, and Connor actually, he sent us a message, didn't he, on our group WhatsApp group for presenters at the weekend, basically pointing us to the ride that Jonas Abrahamsen did on Zwift last Sunday.
Yeah. We are that cool that we WhatsApp each other cycling news stories on Sundays. But anyway, this is noteworthy because Abrahamsen is currently at home in Norway. And whilst he does venture outside, it's quite cold at the moment.
Yeah, not as cold as Canada, but it's still cold.
Nothing is as cold as Canada, mate. Anyway, he does quite a lot of Zwifting instead. On Sunday, he did 5 hours on Zwift with 10 intervals of 20 minutes each.
Yeah, 20-minute blocks at LT1, which is sort of mid to upper zone 2. And that, for Abrahamsen, means a minimum of 340 watts and a max for those 20-minute blocks of 375.
Yeah, now, to get through his 5 hours on Zwift, he fueled with 130 grams of carbs per hour and covered almost 190 kilometres in those 5 hours. So he is 80 kilos there or thereabouts, but nevertheless, I mean, that is some epic power and epic fueling as well.
Yeah.
300 watt average for 5 hours.
Basically, yeah, just short he was, yeah. You wouldn't want him to turn up at your Zwift race, really, would you?
No. I mean, to be fair, I wouldn't want him in my house as well. That's quite a lot of, like, sweaty, noisy, you know.
Yeah, maybe they don't need the heating turned on.
No, he's basically like a one-man heater. Just keep him down in your basement.
By the way, for those of you wondering the sort of bants that goes on in that GCN presenter WhatsApp group, yes, it is just as boring as you would expect.
Yeah, GIFs are banned.
Yeah, you banned them. Is it GIFs?
I thought it was GIFs.
I've always said GIFs, but somebody told me it was GIFs anyway.
Surely it's not a GIF.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. Let us know in the comments below.
God. Right, let's finish Cycling Shorts Now by announcing a brand new giveaway. Well, you say announcing a brand new giveaway. We talked about it last week.
Oh, did you? Yes, yeah, sorry, I did watch. Yeah.
Anyway, we've partnered up with Topeak, as you will know if you saw last week, and we've got three bundles that you have a chance of getting your hands on.
Those bundles will include the Z-Rack with strap mount for bags and panniers, a U-Shell dry bag, and a U-Shell for Z-Rack Essential.
Yes, this is basically like a pannier rack, Connor was explaining to me, with a supercool dry bag.
I was looking at them earlier, I thought Connor would love this.
Oh, yeah.
He'd be gutted he can't enter.
He's all over it, yeah. I think he's already got a set. Anyway, in order to put yourself in with a chance of winning, all you need to do is click on the link that's in the description below and follow the instructions. There are a few territory restrictions on this one, so do check that you're eligible to enter.
You've got until Tuesday, the 9th of December, to get your entry in. Good luck. Next up, hack... / bodge of the week. The first one this week comes in from Carl Schmitz. Extended derailleur hanger. I wanted to give my winter road bike more capability in bad snow conditions. Might be from Canada.
Inevitably.
The Forge 2-tooth cassette and Durex T derailleur obviously didn't work off the bat. I wanted to try PCB Ways online CNC service, so I cadded up a copy of my hanger and gave it a 15mm extension and sent off the file. A few weeks later, I had the finished piece and it was beautifully made. It's something you just bought aloud in Hacks and Bodges.
Well, so I think it's the fact that it was kind of almost like self-designed,
yeah, okay,
and then someone else CNC machined it.
Okay, well, we can get onto this. I'll just...
The end of this is what makes me chuckle. The piece itself wasn't a bargain, but if you pull together with other cyclists who also need, bizarrely, the same rear derailleur hang as you, the price per unit drops significantly.
This sounds like something I would never have ordered in my entire life and never will.
No, but do you know what?
I'm reluctant to go retail price on anything, let alone spend more than you could get it for elsewhere.
But I'm also chuckling because it's the kind of thing where I've done inadvertently in the past where I've thought of something that I want to do to my bike and I've started buying stuff that I need, and then the more stuff you buy, the more you realise that it's not going to work, so you need to buy more and more shit until eventually you're like, If I'd just done something completely different in the beginning, I would have saved myself hundreds of pounds. So anyway, Carl, I'm not sure we can call this a hack.
No, it's a purchased item, and also, I mean, it's still very stretched, that Durex T rear derailleur, isn't it?
I mean, I think you need a long cage rear derailleur, personally.
Yeah.
But anyway, if it works for you, then that's great. I'm glad to see that, But yeah, but should we just say he's just not eligible to enter?
Yeah, rather than be too harsh. Yeah,
yeah, okay. All right, moving on then. We've got this one sent in by MGV Chalky. Yeah, thanks for rescuing me on that one. I was trying to see what it read over two lines. But anyway, not enough space in my office for a desk and an indoor bike, so I've combined the both. Oh no. The bike fits inside the desk, which opens up to reveal the bike turbo trainer. And yes, there is plenty of space. I'm 6'3". There's plenty of airflow, like a wind tunnel. It's very easy to get on and off the bike. Goodness me.
We had that before. We've had something very similar before. At least I've seen something similar
I've
before.
Never seen anything like that. I'm blown away. I think we might need to explain this for our podcast listeners. So it's like... I don't even know where to start. So it's a tall desk with like laptop and stuff on it. And then it appears to split in half, revealing inside like some kind of Thunderbird.
I don't think it needs to split. I think it's just the bike's already in there.
Oh, I see. He's just opened and he's flipped open the desktop. I mean, that is absolute genius, isn't it? if it genuinely works, I mean, I do worry about the airflow, but as you've said, it's okay.
You must be a bit worried about the UCI's new rules on handlebar width.
Yeah, true that.
Yeah.
No, I think that's cool.
It's very cool, yeah.
Is that a box of tissues next to his training bike as well? What do you use tissues for?
Well, maybe they're just...
Mop your brow.
I was going to say maybe they're just on the desk for if he sneezes, but they're not on the desk before it's opened. So
no.
It's not that, is it?
And like Clark Kent from Superman, the glasses are just left next to the things. You've transformed yourself into a superhero.
All right, we'll go hack, shall we, for that?
Oh, a hack, yeah, brilliant.
Great stuff. Joe Sherman, if it works, it works. Tubist tyre had a puncture on the turbo. Oh, must be a wheel on turbo trainer.
Yeah.
Feature. Yes, it is. Quick fix to keep me riding. Sellotape round the wheel. Has worked, so maybe we should keep a roll on me for my next ride.
Don't do that. I mean, I don't know how long it will last, But the thought of a very slippery patch of tyre.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine that would throw you off, but even so, please don't do that.
No. Well, even if it's worked on the turbo train, I'd feel reluctant to give this a hack.
I mean, I think it's a bodge.
Yeah.
Anyway, if it's tubeless, surely it might have sealed anyway.
Maybe it's nothing to do with the sellotape.
Okay, all right. No, bodge for that one, just out of principle.
Or we've got another similar one.
Mike Vazovsky, I think that one is. A few months ago, I noticed a tiny patch of rubber on my tyre's contact surface had peeled off, like the skin on a tender palm after a day's work of construction.
A poet here.
Yeah. I ordered a new set right away, of course, but while waiting for them to arrive, I improvised. I glued a piece of inner tube over the wounded spot, wrapped the ends over the beads, and stuck them to the sidewalls. My logic was simple. The Kevlar mesh was still intact, so surely the whole contraption would hold together. And it did. For a few weeks, roughly 1,000 kilometres, my budget patch job hung in there with surprising dignity, right up until the new Continentals arrived to take over.
Yeah.
I mean, from looking at the patch, the size of the hole that you've glued over, that's not bad, actually, is it? But who would have thought that an inner tube was made of sturdy enough material that you could do 1,000K?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I might have patched it on the inside rather than the outside.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I think I might have just carried on riding.
Yeah, back in the day, a tyre like that would have lasted me a few thousand kilometres.
Absolutely.
Without any patch over the top.
Yeah.
I just would have suffered the punctures.
Yeah. Anyway, that's cool. That's kind of a hack.
Yeah, I'll go if a I hack wouldn't, for that one.
Wouldn't ever do it myself.
Last one this week comes in from Bernd, who put, during a trip to Basel, I saw this extraordinary bike in a goldsmith shop windows made by Marcus Keller. He named it Bicycle Tart. In my opinion, maximum bling
is
factor.
That bicyclette art rather than bike?
I think you might be right, Zay.
Bicycle
again.
Tart was me in my white oversocks.
That's a Freudian slip. What's the name for a Freudian slip that you read in the ones of reading a bicycle tart? Anyway, maximum bling factor, e.g. pearls at the spokes and a nice figurehead like the Rolls-Royce Emily. Never seen anything like it before. Inspiring.
I mean, that is quite cool, isn't it? You wouldn't catch me riding on it, but I wouldn't mind seeing it in a goldsmith's.
It is a well-dressed shop window, that one, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah. Oh, that's cool. I like that. We're going to call it a hack then.
Okay, yeah, I like the bicycle tart.
Right, keep your hacks and bodges coming in, please, and we will have some more for you next week. Time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to win a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comment section down below that relates to a photo we'll give you after the results from last week.
Last week's photo was this one of Belgium champs Sven, I was about to say, then, show my age again. Thibaut Nace winning the first round of the UCI Cyclocross World Cup with a big inflatable duck behind him. We've got an honourable mention this week, haven't we?
We do, yeah. We had trouble splitting the top two because they both made us laugh. But we have, sadly, super nice Bob. You get an honourable mention. Yeah. But I figured seeing as you're super nice, you'd probably be pretty okay with that.
It'll be chill.
Anyway, yeah. Thibaut doesn't quack under pressure.
Very
said
good.
Said Bob, yeah. Like that one.
Not quite good enough because our winner this week is David Foster, 4212. While the race was terrific, the finish was foul.
That was brilliant. Well done, David. Get in touch and we will get your GCN Camelback water bottle out to you.
Right then, this week's photo comes from the Ghent 6 Day. This is Philip Heinen of the Netherlands taking a look down his stem by the looks of things. I'll get you started. Do I have to have this massive battery pack here for my lights?
I can't believe, sorry Dan, that was funny, but I can't believe those handlebars are UCI legal.
No, me neither.
They look like something that Batman would use to like destroy his enemies. That looks lethal.
I don't even know what it actually is under the handlebar, some sort of transponder for timing, or it looks too big for that.
Like a camera?
Oh yeah, it probably is a camera, isn't it?
Yeah. Crazy. All around craziness. Oh. But anyway, if you think you can better Dan's caption, and even if you think you can't, get involved in the comment section down below. We'll pick a winner next week. Or possibly even an honourable mention if it's funny enough.
Never know
but
your
not
luck.
Quite funny enough. Yeah.
Before we let you know what's coming up on the channel this week, we've picked out a few of our favourite comments from last week's videos. We'll start, as ever, with some from underneath the GCN show, which was, cyclists should be able to run red lights.
This was according to a Canadian law professor, okay. Dan. He'd thought through the argument very well. Mm. And actually, it was quite compelling. Mm. It was. Anyway, Aura Tab said, considering how much car drivers complain about having to wait at red traffic lights, and pedestrians and cyclists usually have to wait considerably longer at traffic lights than cars in the UK, it would be helpful if pedestrians and cyclists could be favoured more at traffic lights to help more people walk and cycle. I think that's a fair point.
Yeah, makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Super demon, but thing is, the problem ain't careful cyclists edging forward at an empty junction, really. It's the ones who treat every light and crossing as optional. On my commute, I regularly see riders flying through red lights while pedestrians are crossing or completely ignoring zebra crossings, both while people are waiting to cross and when people are actively crossing. The other day, I watched six cyclists ride straight past a parent with a pushchair, clearly waiting to cross. Some rider shows zero regard for pedestrian safety. If you officially say cyclists can roll red lights, a chunk of them won't treat that as a cautious exemption. They'll take it as a licence to push it even further and blast through faster, putting more people at risk because they believe it's now allowed.
I'm not sure I completely agree with that, because if you're already witnessing people breaking the law, why would changing the law make people behave worse?
Well, I guess there's some people that think about doing it and then think, no, it's against the law, I better not, whilst but others still do. But if it's not against the law...
This is just cyclists acting like dicks, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to like being allowed to turn right at a red traffic light if you're in the rest of the world, or turn left. I don't know. Like, I get your point, but I feel like changing a law that might keep people safer, or not doing that rather, because some people are behaving like dicks. Like, if you did that for cars, there are a number of car drivers that behave like idiots, and yeah, the rules are the rules. I don't know. I'm not totally sold on that one, Super Demon, I'm afraid.
Marks and Oval. In Colorado, it is legal for cyclists to use stop signs as yield and red lights as stop signs. Works very well. It's what everybody did before this law was passed, but now it's legal.
Mm. And then Stephen M said, my town just passed a law allowing cyclists to look both ways and go through red lights and roll through stop signs. It's been so much better and gets me out of the way of traffic. There we go. So a few people already experiencing it, saying it works better. Mm. I don't know. Yeah. We shall see.
Meanwhile, under This Is What We Actually Do on Zwift, which is all of us explaining our Zwifting experiences, wasn't it? NL's put, Ollie looks like he's combining climatisation and asbestos removal.
I love how serious he looks in his core suit as well. Like, you know, I will be very hot for the next 45 minutes and it's going to improve my FTP, Dan. More Barker Rides say, are we just going to skim over the fact that not only does Dan Lloyd's house have a foyer, but also that he has adorned it with a grand piano?
Correction, I have not adorned it with a grand piano. Lorraine did that because Jude's actually got quite good at playing piano.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he did get to the point where he actually felt like he sort of deserved it. So early Christmas
present. Oh, nice. It's big enough for recitals in there, isn't it?
Basically, yeah, I'm going to make a studio next. Just need to sell a couple of my vintage bikes and be able to get some soundproofing.
Okay.
James Tosh, but sorry, that out plan sounds perfect. I've been looking for the ideal way to combine a Zwift route and a workout.
There you go. Give it a whirl, but don't come crying to me if it really hurts. So, because it is a good one. And then Chris Madge, I've been training and racing for 40 years. Mentally, I'm done with workouts and intervals. I use Zwift for Zone 2 and a couple of races every week. I find Zwift racing pushes me harder than anything else and gets me to my best fitness.
Connor finds exactly the same.
I see, yeah, you and Connor both, Chris.
A few comments underneath your super nerds on the UK's fastest road, Si. Akoi Magiting put, this is the first thing we ever succeeded at, in inverted commas. Then everyone completely fails the handshakes and fist bumps.
We were so excited. Yeah, so excited. Peter Campbell had a chuckle at Ollie talking about when we're on the indoor trainer, how he doesn't have to put out as much power because everyone knows he's more aero, and then spent the entire workout out the saddle at 60 RPM.
Chris would put, Ollie getting everyone to hold up for him, then takes the win at the end, lol. And finally, Spock Cycles put, respect to Alf. What an amazing record to achieve in 1978, and he held that record for 47 years until 2025. I mean, it's something we've talked about for months, Alf Enger's record, isn't it, on a road bike?
Yeah.
It is remarkable.
Yeah, I've been trying to get hold of him for an interview and to make a film with him and do a bit of justice, but... But it's remarkably difficult to get hold of him, so I've failed so far. Do you know what?
After probably somebody listening or watching that can.
Good point. If you know Alf, could you please say we'd love to come chat to him. He used to own the best bagel shop in London.
Oh yes, he did. I remember that.
Yeah, Ollie was telling us about that. So
that's where I remember it from. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it? And then Dan, lots of feedback about your 7 months of cycling. Yep. video. Chris Beard, I've not found it self-centred at all, Dan. Genuinely inspiring and loving the message of small but regular changes. Really helped me out with the last year and a bit. And then there's an acronym, I don't know what that means.
I looked that up.
Go on then, what is it?
Keep up the good work.
Oh, that's nice, mate.
Yeah. Chris Strider, as you age, maintaining fitness is a win. And yeah, nice. If you're well trained already, I guess it is. GMS 86 Stream, in 2022 in August, I said to myself, enough is enough, and I've restarted training. Back then, my weight was 116 kilos, my VO2 max about 40, fat mass 38%. After cycling and other activities, my weight is 84 kilograms, my VO2 max is 52, and my fat mass 17%. Muscle mass has increased from 20 to 38%, and I've become quite a good cyclist. That is quite a turnaround in 3 and a bit years, isn't it?
That is pretty impressive. Yeah, fair play to you, GMS. And then Dom Soot put a plot twist. The 7 months refers to how long he's been holding that flex for on the thumbnail.
Yeah. Or the length of time it took on Photoshop.
I was going to say, I can't believe no one's commented on the fact that your 46-year-old body was Photoshopped quite that severely, Dan.
Somebody put a comment like, no way he said 11.7%. I mean, I can only assume they think I'm less.
Even leaner.
Yeah. Right, coming out this week then, on Thursday, we don't know what the title of this video is going to be just yet, but effectively, it is Connor making quite a big announcement.
Yeah, a good announcement, by the way, before you all jump to the wrong conclusions.
Definitely not the 16-8 diet, is it?
The what?
Fasting for 16 hours, eating for 8.
Oh, I see, no.
He wouldn't survive on that.
He would not survive on that. Yeah, I had a chuckle. There's another comment, by the way, under the Super Nerds video, which was something like, this is the first GCN challenge where Connor's not hit the wall and blown his doors.
I did see that.
Yeah, I had a chuckle. Anyway, and then on Saturday, that aforementioned vintage bike.
Yeah.
So, I can put you out of misery now. It was a Team Festina bike. Festina, you all know, as being possibly the most controversial team in cycling, I would argue. Anyway, we got a hold of this bike, another one from Vintage Velo Dan's collection, and we basically were asking the question, why has a titanium bike never won the Tour de France?
Oh, is it not?
No, is it because it's just slow?
I know Lance technically hasn't won the Tour de France at this point, but did he not have a titanium bike that was badged up as a Trek?
So he had a light speed time trial bike.
Oh yeah.
But he rode whatever, like 18 stages on his carbon Trek. So I discounted that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting actually when you look at frame materials of the Tour de France. I mean, I know it sounds quite nerdy, just that statement, but you mark my words, it's very interesting. And then on Sunday, I have been...
Don't worry, mate, we're only talking to ourselves at this point anyway.
Good point, yeah. On Sunday, I've been riding to work on a fixed gear bicycle, my first ever fixed gear bicycle. And basically, has it made me fitter? Have I enjoyed it? Have I become cool? Mm. Has it fallen apart?
Have you got grumpier?
Have I what? Become grumpier?
Yeah.
I don't think I've become grumpier.
No, I don't think you could.
Had to run a few red lights, mate, because I couldn't stop. Apart from that, no, I'm only joking. Only joking.
Right, if you have got to this point, thanks very much for watching the entire show. We'll see you again next week.
See you then.